Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next Hot Docs interview is with Kalina Bertin, and she's here to talk about her new film, Manic, which is premiering here at Hot Docs. And again, this is another film that you're going to need to see, and you will probably make your judgment call on that after you've heard the interview or maybe gone online and read a little bit more about the film and about Kalina and so on and her story. But this is a film, once again, it's about finding our way back home, it seems to me. This is a film about mental health issues. This is a film about secrets. This is a film about family. This is a film about our past and how things get passed on. This is a story about why, you know, we need to be, again, we need to be talking about things. We need to be creating a new conversation. We need to be creating a healthy conversation. We need to be creating something that's, you know, more intimate and open and more understanding. And Kalina talks about a level of ignorance that she had when she started making this film that was that was kind of eclipsed by her own prejudice. I mean, what a wonderful and wise, insightful thing to say. You're going to love the interview. You're going to love the film. It's called Manic. Kalina Bertin coming right up. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my podcasting, about my speaking, and about my writing. There's lots of interviews there to choose from. Don't forget, too, you can help support what I do here at Face to Face through patreon.com and also rabble.ca for more interviews. Coming up, a Hot Docs interview with Kalina Bertin about her new film, Manic. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by another filmmaker today, another Hot Docs filmmaker here today to talk about her new film, Manic. Kalina Bertin is here with us right now, live and in person. Kalina, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So are you in town? Are you here ready to roll for Hot Docs?
Absolutely, yes. I'm having my premiere tonight, Sunday, at 6:30 at the Scotiabank.
Amazing. And it's going to show over the next week, of course. And then are you...
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and are you hoping to get a theatrical release, or have you got any of that sorted out yet?
Not sorted out, but I think it's definitely on the table. We're looking into
nice.
It, and it's just a matter of time.
Amazing. Well, first of all, congratulations. Congratulations on being here in Toronto at Hot Docs. Congratulations on your film. It's mesmerizing. It's mysterious. It's really disturbing on so many levels, but also really intriguing as well. So thanks.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Can you tell us a little bit about the film without giving too much away before we dive in? I've got lots of questions to ask you.
Well, absolutely. So my film, Manic, essentially chronicles my struggle to make sense of the mental illness wreaking havoc over my siblings' lives, and convinced that my father holds a key piece to understanding this mental illness, I set out on a journey to sort of piece together his life, and I discover a man alternately known as a cult leader, a scam artist, and a father of 15.
So that's a whole lot. We could go a whole lot of places with that, and I think it's really quite a remarkable reveal. I mean, I kind of want to ask you about it as a filmmaker, but I kind of just want to ask you about it as, you know, Kalina Bertin, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, because this is such a personal film. I mean, you're not documenting something else or something other. This is, you're documenting you. You're documenting your life. This has got to have been really difficult at times.
Absolutely. I kind of had to play two roles in this process. I was at once the daughter of the subject and also the filmmaker. So I had to kind of reconcile those two roles. It wasn't always easy. You know, there were some moments that were very, very hard, and I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to, you know, continue and pull it together. But luckily I did. And it was a very long process, but I think it kind of like shred me to pieces and rebuilt me. Mm. So it was quite illuminating. But I think also sort of the intimate connection that I had to the subject really helped sort of capture those very intimate and raw scenes that you can see throughout the film.
So I'm fascinated for so many reasons, but Kalina, so many people would have an, I think anyway, maybe this is a sweeping generalization, but I would imagine a lot of people would have an opportunity to look into their past, to go this deep, and would say, you know what, I don't really need to know. I'd rather not know some of these details. I'm just going to live my life going forward from today on. In fact, I have a family member who I mean, the timing of your film is really quite remarkable for me, because just maybe 2 to 3 weeks ago, I had quite an intimate conversation with someone in my family who just said, no, don't want to go there. Thanks.
Oh,
we need, yeah. And kind of heartbreaking on one level, right? And kind of, and kind of revealing on another. And yet at a certain point, you know, as I was driving away, I went, okay, I do have to come to terms with that. I've got to respect that, right? At some point, I've got to respect that decision. But yet there was this sense of, wow, why not? Why wouldn't you?
I absolutely understand you. And so what you're describing, sort of like wanting to shut away the past, forget about the past, is very much the position that my mother had regarding this whole story, because I grew up not really knowing who my father was. And, you know, when I was a child, I'd ask questions to my mother, and she just would not want to talk about it. And that sort of was like a growing pain when I became a teen. And, you know, during those years of crisis, you're trying to understand who you are and where you came from. And I felt like there was a huge void for me, because not only I looked so much like my father, I didn't really know, you know, who he was. And I felt like I didn't know who I was. And so my mother's position was like, it's better that you don't know. But I just felt like sort of this veil of secrecy kind of enabled trauma to seep into our lives and to continue harming us. So I really felt like my father was continuing to live through us because of the secrecy of his life. And for me, to find healing, the only way was to kind of confront these questions and shed light on them, and to really have a dialogue, because there was no dialogue in my family. You know, the mental illness was kept a secret. Like, when I was making this film, I discovered that my father had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and that probably could explain why his life was so chaotic. And but also then I discovered that his own father had been diagnosed with manic depression, bipolar disorder, but it was all a secret. So and I discovered that by interviewing my father's sister. And so she said in the family they could not discuss the mental illness of their father. And for my father, so that was passed on to my father. And we, like, it was never discussed that my father was, you know, mentally ill. And if my mother had sat down with us and explained, listen, we have sort of this legacy of mental illness on your father's side. It's important to know that you may be vulnerable to this. And so you have to be careful. You know what I mean? Because my brother, he went out when he was about 18 and he started using, and that triggered the illness. So I felt like, because we didn't know, we didn't have the tools to kind of protect ourselves and to change this legacy.
So tell me a little bit about that. I was going to ask you about the process of I'm really fascinated by your phrase, triggering the illness, because it brings up a lot of questions, I suppose, about the bipolar disorder. I had a friend who I studied philosophy with who who I had a couple of pretty, what I would call, I suppose, manic kind of experiences with him. And we had a great friendship over many, many years. And it was only till he stayed with me for about 3 days where I started to see things that I hadn't seen before. And where there was this level of intimacy, I suppose, that was, you know, developed between Danny and I. And I remember it's kind of comical in a way, but he flooded my apartment. And
okay.
he was high at the time, and I came home. It was late at night, and I just remember going, wow, what is going on?
What is happening? Yeah.
Yeah. What is happening here? Is this some kind of weird joke? Is he, you know? And really, it was kind of my first sort of introduction, and then the next 2 years, I was kind of drawn into his family and his life and so on. So you do that beautifully well, and I marvel at how open you are, you know, with your family and with your experience, because I would imagine this is going to just, I would hope, blow the conversation wide open.
Yes. Well, absolutely. Well, like you were saying, you know, it's bipolar disorder, which used to be known as manic depression, mm-hmm. but it's the same thing, is this larger than life condition that is so hard to grasp and to understand. And I, throughout making this film, I realized that I knew nothing about mm-hmm. this condition. Mm-hmm. I only had prejudice.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. That's a really wise thing, yeah, to say.
Exactly, and most people actually do. And you know what the crazy thing is as I was talking more and more about this film, I realized how so many people either have a loved one or, you know, a friend or a friend of a friend who suffers with bipolar disorder. So it's much more common than we would imagine. But it's something that we don't know about and that we're not talking about.
So tell me again why you wanted to talk about it. Was this about healing for you? Was this about healing for your family? Was it about creating an opportunity for others to have a conversation? Maybe all of the above?
Yeah, I'd say definitely all of the above. But it started sort of in personal, because I realized that in my family, what comes with bipolar disorder often when the person is first diagnosed is denial. So if it's kept a secret in the family and the person struggling with the disorder is in denial, then healing is almost impossible. So for me, when I was making the film and understanding more about the illness, there's kind of different types of bipolar disorder, right? There's bipolar type 1, there's bipolar type 2, and then there's cyclophrenia. So my siblings and in my family, what sort of we have is bipolar type 2, in which you can experience psychosis. So there's different stages. There's like hypomania, mania, psychosis, and depression. All this I learned throughout making the film. And once I understood those things, I could sort of try to guide my loved ones, my siblings, and try to help them. So, okay, I could recognize the signs. Okay, right now, Francois, you're hypomanic. So you need to either take your meds or calm down, because if you don't, this is going to escalate to mania. And that's when often, or worse, psychosis. And that's when you end up in the hospital.
Right.
And so, you know, but the more we talked, the more my siblings started to acknowledge, yes, I have this disorder. Yes, it's scary because it's kind of a life sentence. Because there's no cure to bipolar disorder. You can take medications to find stability and live a healthy, you know, somewhat normal life. But this is something that you will be struggling with throughout your whole life. So that's why it's so hard to accept that you have it. But throughout making the film and sort of filming them, and also I would show them kind of works in progress of the film so they could see themselves from outside. So the camera was kind of like a window for them into their own world. And so that really helped them to try to find ways to heal.
You know, at near the end of the film, Francois, I think it's Francois, is talking about something that I just thought was really profound and kind of, I suppose, commiserating with, I think, your sister and you, the three of you, and making a joke about, you know, where have you gone? And, oh, yeah, right, you're behind the camera. But he said something about, people don't speak the same language that I speak. No one really understands out there. And isn't that really what this film is all? Isn't that what this interview we're having right now is all about?
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. Yeah, it's the trying to open up this isolation, because for so long, like, my family was just struggling in silence, and we thought that we were alone, but we're not. You know, like, so many people out there are ashamed of this illness that's controlling their lives. You know, I want to show them.
Yeah, no, it's really, it's fascinating that you use the word ashamed. So I've already done a few interviews for Hot Docs this year, and I think, you know, shame continues, this idea of shame and guilt and how it's impacting who we are and how it's getting in the way of our ability to have can I say joyful relationships with others. You know,
absolutely.
It's not
absolutely.
Allowing us to connect. It's not allowing us to and connect's not even the right word because it sounds almost too, I don't know, digital or too technical. It's not relational enough, but it's not allowing us to I don't know, form intimate community. There you go. How's that?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. And there was so much shame in my family because of my father's kind of chaotic life. And I think my mother felt a lot of shame. So that's why she was trying to conceal it. And with the illness, also lots of shame that comes with that. And that's why I love so much. Like some people, you know, they ask me, oh, why did you do this film? And for me, the absolute expression of why I decided to make this film, it really relies in that scene of when my sister is in her kitchen and she talks about how hard it is for her to go to welfare. Because at this point, she's lost her job because she had another psychotic episode.
Right.
But she has a daughter that she has to support.
Yes.
So she talks about the shame and the guilt to have to go to ask for, you know, social assistance, welfare. But she says that as long as she feels guilty and ashamed, she can't face this illness and overcome it. You know, it's not her fault. It's like she's been dealt like a bad deck of cards. You know what I mean? Like, but the only way is to face it head on and to accept it. And the shame does not help.
Do you think that you talk about your family not wanting to talk about it. I mentioned that in my family. And boy, you wouldn't have to go very far in your community to find lots of people with lots of stories that don't want to talk about them. Do you think that actually feeds into the mental health issues? That, you know, it certainly feeds into disconnection. It certainly feeds into, you know, a lack of community. But what about the mental health issues?
Well, definitely. The first step is obviously talking about it, and because that's how you can help your loved one. You know, there's also this scene where I tell my sister, you know, you have to tell me what's going on inside your mind,
right?
So I can try to understand and I can try to help you. You know, oftentimes people struggling with mental illness, because of their shame, they don't want to reach out, or they feel like they're a burden. You know, but it's so, and it, often when the person is suffering most, when they most need to communicate, that they don't reach out. So yes, communication is so essential in keeping those loved ones alive. Like the rates of suicide with people struggling with mental health, but I know by reading the stats, with bipolar disorder is extremely high. So yes, it's extremely important to keep the conversation on the table, because the thing is, maybe, you know, I did this film and I'm trying to look for answers and solutions. I don't have them all.
Right.
But by sharing this film with the world, maybe it'll touch other professionals, psychiatrists, you know, nurses, institutions, so they can start a dialogue amongst themselves and find, you know, also like concrete solutions as to how we can better communicate, how we can create more awareness towards this, you know, condition and create, you know, intervene earlier amongst young ones struggling, and what can be done, you know, to help people
with
mental illness.
Recognizing it earlier so that you can have a better conversation about it, but also get better treatment and provide a better environment, a healthier environment, right? A more loving environment. To foster, more intimate relationships, which you would like to think is going to lead towards healing. Tell me more about your brother's illness and how he triggered it. Now, you said by using, so I'm assuming some, you know, drugs of some kind, or maybe alcohol, mixing medications, something along those lines?
Yes. Well, so I do believe that my brother sort of had mild symptoms of bipolar disorder, but they were mild. So when growing up, he kind of had, his moods would fluctuate, but I think he could have probably lived his whole life just by, you know, sort of navigating mildly through those ups and downs. But because he was using, that really, what happened is that triggered psychosis. And once you go through psychosis, that changes the brain. And the more you experience psychosis, the more your brain changes, the harder it is to treat. So the medication doesn't work as well. And that's something a lot of people don't know. And that's something I found out through the meetings that I went to with my brother, with his psychiatrist, and through reading. And the thing also is that, you know, lots of teens, you know, when they turn around, you know, 13, or they start using, and they don't know that, you know, if they have a history of mental illness, drugs can trigger bipolar disorder. You know, cocaine, pots, and even pot. Some people think that pot is, you know, a milder drug, but it's so hard. The degree of THC in the pot that circulates on the street is extremely high. and dangerous for people who are vulnerable to mental illness. And so in my brother's case, it was a mixture of drugs, but I know that marijuana also like played a big role in sort of triggering the psychosis.
So can we then go to your father? And,
yeah.
You know, he served Pearl Harbor, Korean War, torture, alcoholism, PTSD. How much do you think, I mean, this is some pretty, you know, he's got some pretty horrific elements in his past. How much do you think that played into it? I mean, looking for, not, you know, not wanting to point blame, but I suppose looking for some kind of understanding or sense of responsibility around how might things have been done differently.
Yes, yes. Let me just clarify. So that was actually my grandfather.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So it was my grandfather who went to Pearl Harbor, to Korea, and actually.
So you're talking about transgenerational trauma.
This is transgenerational trauma because I do believe. So yes, my grandfather, he went to the war, and when he came back, he was diagnosed by the medical psychiatrist with bipolar disorder. But what happened is when he was in Korea, he was kind of. He was ahead of, I can't remember what the army term is, but I don't remember if it was a general, but he was ahead of a group and he got captured. Hmm. And all of the people in the sort of the corps were killed, unfortunately, and he survived. So he had survival guilt. And so that trauma probably triggered the illness, and then he became an alcoholic to try to sort of manage the post-traumatic stress,
right,
and his mental illness, which is very, very common among people dealing with bipolar disorder.
Sure. Yep.
Is that they will go to recreational drugs to self-medicate, which really isn't ideal because those drugs can, like I said, trigger psychosis and worsen depression. But so I do believe that my father grew up in extremely traumatic conditions because of sort of the psychotic episodes that his own father was going through. And because, like I was saying, like, it was secret. So in his family, they could not discuss the mental illness of their father, and they didn't even know. Like, my aunt found out that her father was manic depressive, like, after he died. Mm. So it was not discussed. So you grow up thinking that this chaos is normal, right? And that creates very confusing.
Well, it makes you had to have at some point, and maybe quite often, wondered if there had been a film like yours about somebody else's family, had there been more conversation, had there been less shame and this ability to be honest and open and authentic and transparent with one another, could have things been way different?
Yeah, because then my father would have known that he was vulnerable to this mental illness,
right,
and maybe he would have been more careful in the kind of life that he did, that he lived. You know, but because it was a secret, probably the first symptoms arrived and there was the denial, no, I'm not sick, I'm fine, and I'm not going to seek treatment, right? When he was diagnosed, you know, he took lithium for a very short amount of time and then went off it. So my father never seeked, like, a successful treatment plan, and essentially, like, sadly, he just created so much chaos and shattered so many lives. But had he sought that treatment, you know, it just would have, you know, saved so many people.
Well, I believe the blurb on the Hot Doc site and in the press kit talks about your father. Well, actually, I think you referred to it right out of the gate on the interview, but a prophet, a scam artist, a cult leader, father of 15 children worldwide. You watch your film and there's this sense, you know, at one point you know, I kind of went, wow, this is the kind of a story they should make a movie about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it just, because you almost, it's almost hard to believe.
Yeah.
And it's, definitely. Wow, this has to be fictional, for crying out loud. There's no way that families are living with this kind of pain and brokenness and trauma.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so remarkable about your film, and I so appreciate the fact that you, your generosity and your willingness and ability to actually put it up there for all of us to see, I think is not only fascinating. I think it's something we should all be working towards. You know, daily conversation. I mean, the things that we should be talking about more often.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And yes, exactly, for me, that's what I want to shed light on mental illness, but I also want to incite people to look into their own lives.
Mm.
And everybody's got their own secrets, you
right.
know, and it's really by shedding light to them that, you know, you can reconnect with a loved one who you haven't spoke to in 10 years, you know. you know, just bring us all more together and try to ameliorate.
Well, and
know,
everybody and everybody has a story, right? And everybody has a story that's important and that needs to be validated and that needs to be affirmed. And maybe you're not going to make a film about it, but it's still the power of our past, the power of, you know, trying to get a better sense and understand who we are and I would like to think can only help us in, you know, the steps forward, the relationships we're going to have. Hey, at what point, or you must have throughout the making of the film said to yourself, what have I done? You know, what have I gotten myself into here? Like, this would have been so much easier to make a film about somebody else's mental health issues or somebody else's past. I should have left mine alone.
Absolutely. Yes. And there are these moments of self-doubt, you know, and I'm sure every filmmaker with every subject goes through that. But in my case, yes, it was extremely hard because I was exposing my family, and I was also afraid, what is my family going to think of this film? And is it going to divide us? You know, that's the last thing that I wanted, was for this film to divide us. So what I did actually is I tried to involve my brother and my sister, who are the most vulnerable characters in this film. I tried to involve them as much as I could in the creative process.
Sure. Yep.
So I would show them like work in progress of the editing and one of the final versions, we sat down and I told them, if there's anything you want me to pull out that you're uncomfortable with, just tell me. And fortunately, they were very happy with the film. Because they were just happy to share their story. They felt it was empowering to share their stories with others. So once I got my family's blessing, I started to feel good about it, and I was happy that I had gone through all this process. But yes, like I was saying in the beginning, like this kind of, you know, it's not easy to find out that your father had done horrible things. You know, but does that make me a monster? Like, because I have that in my blood, right? But I found that by knowing, I'd be sure that I would do everything I could to never follow my father's footsteps into the darkness, you know? That was kind of like my only key, because if you don't know the past, there's a big chance that you'll repeat it.
Right, right. Well, especially, isn't it really all kind of interconnected anyway? You know, the connections of, you know, my past probably is going to cross over a little bit with your past and so on. I mean, an interview I did with an Indian filmmaker earlier this week, and just this idea of, you know, continued idea that keeps coming up over and over, similarity through difference. Yes, you're different. Yes, your story is different. Yes, you live in another part of the world. But you know what? We really are kind of living under the same umbrella.
Yeah, definitely. And more with, like, you know, everything being so connected and globalization.
Well, this is one of the benefits of globalization, it seems to me. People like yourself getting out there telling these stories and hopefully, you know, more and more people around the world getting to see them. You were 24 when it finally hit you and you said, okay, enough is enough. I've got to figure out what's going on here.
Yes.
So had you at any point up until, you must have been wondering up until you were 24, what was the tipping point for you? Was it a relationship you were in? Was it a book you were reading? What was it that said, okay, enough is enough, I need to find out more?
So what really happened is that when I was finishing film school, because I had this dream to make this film about my father, but the trigger was when my sister had her first psychotic episode, because my brother had been struggling with bipolar disorder for about 7 years, but at that point his state was really deteriorating. And then my sister experienced her first psychotic episode, and my sister was like, she was my rock. Like, I looked up to my sister. She had played such an important role when I was a teen in helping me find myself. And when I saw her become a completely different person, that like shook me to the core.
Right.
And I was the other thing is, like, we are four siblings from my father and mother.
Right.
And that was 50% of us that were going mad. So that scared me. You know, I could be next.
Right.
I could be next. So I have to know what this illness is about. And I have to try to find ways for this to stop destroying us.
Yeah, somebody, I think it was your sister who talked about being haunted by ghosts. By these ghosts. And, you know, and I think what's so beautiful about what you've done and your project and your film and the story that you've told is that it really should, and I hope, will act as a challenge to all of us to kind of confront those ghosts, and because we've all got them, right?
Yeah.
They're all kind of lurking in one way or another. Like you said, we've all got secrets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was really too, you know, and we're going to have to wrap up here in a second, but the scene with mother-daughter Fatima, is it?
Yeah, Fatima, yeah.
Yeah, is kind of heartbreaking.
It is.
To me in the film. And yet also really, I think, is it an affirming challenge to me as well as a parent? But it's just, it's about, I guess, just being more aware, being sensitive, being able to really listen. Am I landing anywhere close to what you were hoping for with that scene?
Well, yes. Well, ultimately, the character of my niece was very fascinating for me because I saw myself in that little girl, you know, trying to understand. But, yeah, because I grew up for about 5 years with my father, and I was trying to understand what he was going through.
Right.
You know, and so I saw, and then Fatima is just kind of that proof of that legacy. You know, my father was the child who had to go through his father's manic episodes. My sister was that child having to go through my father's manic episodes, and then her own child is stuck in that. So that was really like I could see myself, and I could see this vicious cycle. And so, I mean, what we're doing now is she's an extraordinarily smart, bright young girl, extremely sensitive.
She sure seemed like it.
Yeah. She's like the adult.
She wasn't fooling around.
Yeah. So what we're doing right now is we are being very clear with her in terms of what's happening with her mother. And so that it's not a secret. There's nothing to be ashamed of. It's a mental illness. We're trying to treat it. And that, you know, if she lives a balanced life, she will be fine. So, and we talk about it. I'm very, very open with her about this because we don't want to create a stigma.
Right.
But essentially, yes, I wanted to expose what it was like for children to experience their parents struggling with mental illness. And when my sister saw that scene, it changed her.
Oh,
when
I can't
she watched
imagine.
That, it changed her. That's what I really, that is the scene that kickstarted her recovery.
Wow.
She was like, she was like, I can no longer fool myself. You know, I have to get better for my daughter.
So, premiere of your film, world premiere tonight, April 30th, going to be tomorrow, May 1st, May the 6th, and you're hoping and talking about a theatrical release. Can you talk a little bit? I think I've read, as we wrap up here, I've read a little bit about a virtual reality piece that you're working on. Tell us a bit more about that.
Sure. So yes, right now I'm working on a virtual reality experience. And because when I was filming, I was like in documentary, you're always kind of limited with the material that you can collect, right, out in the world. So I wanted through the virtual reality to really dwell further into bipolar disorder, to kind of dissect it and to present it to an audience so that they could really understand the arc of the illness. You know,
right,
I was talking
right.
earlier about, you know, hypomania, mania, psychosis, depression. That was key for me in understanding how I could help my siblings. So the experience is really based on that natural arc of the illness. So these are chapters through which the user will be able to navigate, and the experience is really based on phone calls that I was receiving from my siblings as I was making the film. So through their testimonies, we understand sort of these landscapes that are building, colliding, and falling apart around them. And so the whole experience will be kind of like animated through oil paint-like texture, because both of my siblings are very artistic. My sister paints in the film. So, essentially the project is to create more awareness and shed light on bipolar disorder and the struggles of people who go through this larger-than-life condition.
Sounds marvelous. Sounds beautiful. I'll look forward to it. Is it an art gallery kind of a thing? Is it going to be in a museum? Will it be more of a traveling experience?
Well, it's going to be in a virtual reality festival.
Okay.
And then we're hoping to release it for the wide public. So you'll be able to purchase it on Steam.
Wow.
Or such other platforms. Yeah. Thank you so much.
What a marvelous project you've taken on, Kalina. Thank you so much for your time and your generosity today. The film is Manic. It's premiering at Hot Docs. We've been talking with Kalina Bertin about her film. I really appreciate the time you've taken to spend with me today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It was a great talk.
Hey, Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.